we got what it takes for the circle to break. Revolution lives in me.
Welcome to the Untamed and Unashamed podcast. I'm your host, Jade Bryce, and I am a certified love, intimacy, and relationship coach. I help women reconnect to their bodies and their pleasure, and I help men to become a safe space for that by becoming fully embodied leaders. The mission of this podcast is to expand our capacity in living untamed and unashamed. As we navigate life's ups and downs with all of the vulnerability, compassion, and openness that we can muster, and celebrating our bravery in all of it. Along with the help of guests from all walks of life, we'll discover new truths while doing some unlearning, and we'll gain valuable tools for becoming who we already are. So I invite you to open your heart and be untamed and unashamed. Welcome back to part two of being pregnant at 40 and why it matters so much. If you listened to part one, you know that this journey wasn't just about pregnancy. It was about healing, about breaking cycles, about rewriting the story before a new soul entered it. Viva had been with me long before she arrived in my body. She was a presence, a whisper woven into the fabric of my life, waiting for the right time to step through. And yet, as I neared 40, the possibility of her arrival felt both inevitable and uncertain, like something I could feel in my bones but couldn't yet hold in my hands. So, picking up where we left off from part one, I had just turned 34 shortly after ending that past relationship, and I was determined to make conscious decisions. And I made a promise to myself, no more repeating old patterns. Every decision moving forward had to be rooted in self-awareness and in love, not just for my children, but also for me. The children's father had moved to Oklahoma maybe like 5 or 6 months after the relationship ended. And as I watched my children begin to live their lives in a different type of home, I realized that the work I had to do wasn't just for me, it was also for them. And I realized that the work ahead wasn't just about shielding them from the past and what they had witnessed, it was also about carving a new path entirely. It felt as though we were walking through a dense forest and I was clearing the underbrush, making way for them to grow and walk freely, unburdened by generational weight. And it was my responsibility to break the cycles of old wounds. It was up to me to show them what love looks like and what it feels like and to reframe and remold the stories that were taught to them through that past relationship, to take the fractured stories they held and that they had inherited and reshape them into something whole. I became very immersed in my healing in order to make sure of it, continuing to speak to experts on the podcast, deepen friendships with friends that live intentionally, devoured books on trauma and relationships and parenting and healing, and wrote out the vision I held for our future with very sharp clarity. I also attended a lot of healing circles pretty regularly, gathering pieces of wisdom like sacred stones along my path. And it was in one of those healing circles, shortly after my past relationship ended, that I was reminded of Viva. Only this time, it wasn't simply a name. This time I felt her. She was so grounded and she had such a felt presence. She had dark hair. She always showed up with dark hair in these experiences. She had a very quiet strength and she felt connected to Native American wisdom. At the time, I wasn't aware that I am actually 17% Aztec Native American, so there may be a connection there. But, you know, she showed up in all of these ways and I felt so much love for her already. Being single and freshly out of a toxic relationship, it didn't feel like her arrival would be anytime soon, but I felt the hope of it for the future. And she didn't seem to mind that it wasn't the time. She showed up anyways as a presence. And she came to me again and again in those healing circles, showing up with the quiet certainty of someone who had already decided. She made it clear that we shared a soul contract in this lifetime, just as we had in many before. And I didn't just know she was coming one day, I felt it and I felt her, the way you feel the presence of a soul guide. She wasn't with me just in the way that all women carry their eggs from birth, though that alone is its own kind of magic and its own kind of beauty. But this was in a way that transcended biology. And I felt her the way that you feel the presence of something divine. It was a knowing. It was unmistakable and undeniable. And yet, life unfolded in its own way, as it always does. So sometime the next year, I entered into a relationship and we stayed together for 3 years. We never once, was there like a raising of a voice or a name calling. It was a very safe dynamic when it came to that. And it was incredibly healing for both me and my children to experience that type of safety and home without anger, and for them to experience that a man could, you could know what to expect, and that they weren't afraid of a violent anger. And so it was incredibly healing. But we also knew early on that we were not aligned in the ways that mattered most. And because of that, I knew that we wouldn't have children together. Still, though, every now and then, Viva would appear energetically, lingering at the edges of my consciousness as if to say, "Don't forget, I'm still coming. You're still my mother." And I wasn't sure what that meant, but I knew that the timing wasn't right. When that relationship ended, I was 37, and she came in really strongly right as it ended, and it was the strongest I had ever felt her. With that, I also felt confusion because I was nearing 38, and I thought, well, if I want to bring a child into this world with someone, shouldn't I be with them for a few years first? And so this like sadness settled in. It was like the quiet ache of a possibility that might be slipping away. And I just kept feeling like, is this going to happen? Will I ever have the family unit that I dream of? Will I ever have, you know, that partner that I just know that I'm going to be with forever, that I can grow old with and get through anything with, and that can be a model to my children of a healthy masculine, and that we can model love to, that my children can desire to, my daughter can desire to find a man like, and my son can desire to be more like, and, you know, bring in a child through a relationship like that. I kept wondering, is that ever going to happen? And yet beneath that wondering and beneath that grief, beneath the uncertainty, was still a knowing. It was this peace that just told me it's meant to be, so it will be. I just felt it. But that next year, I did enter into a short relationship, and he was actually the first person that I had dated that asked me questions about my life story and about my past traumas and the healing journeys of them. And with that, the story of Viva came up, and I told him about her and how her name came to me and about the way I had felt her all these years. And when I shared it, we both just knew that he wasn't her father. It was just a felt thing. And also during that short relationship, she didn't show up once during that time, not in dreams, not as a whisper in the background. It was as if she had stepped back waiting. And I thought maybe it's because I wasn't sitting in those circles anymore and like deepening that part of my life. But when that relationship ended shortly after I turned 39, I did feel curiosity again, just like I did before, of like, well, is this going to happen? Because I figured, you know, being 39, I figured 42 might be my cutoff for having another child. And I wasn't holding on to it too tightly. I was really open to it because I still had that faith. But the thing was that was different after this last relationship ending, that was different than the others, was that I knew that my next partner was close. After each of my past breakups, I had taken intentional celibate time, staying away from dating entirely, like not even entertaining that. I just really like focused on what I wanted to do different the next time. But this time, I just knew that that wasn't going to be the case. Something was about to shift. And then came Chris. And for the first month or so, we spoke only as friends, and we were sending long audio message back and forth. hours a day, actually, of audio messages about our lives, our goals, our dreams, our perspectives on love and on purpose. And in those conversations, something unspoken settled between us. We just knew pretty quickly that we were aligned in the ways that truly mattered. And Chris felt sturdy. He felt like the mountain that I had always longed for. Actually, the list that I made about the partner that I really desired and the relationship that I really desired, I titled it A Mountain. And when I met Chris, that is exactly what he felt like. That is what he reminded me of. And it's actually what drew me to him when I first saw his Instagram page. Is it was a ton of shots of mountains and him on mountains. And also his quiet strength, it wasn't just reassuring, it was really anchoring. And I could feel deep in my body that he was capable of standing beside me, unshakable. And I felt the pull of something deeper than just love. It was as though my life itself had shifted into more alignment by knowing him. And during this time of getting to know each other, I felt Viva's presence so clearly one night. And it was the first time I had felt her presence outside of dreams or outside of those healing circles that I used to attend. I just felt her presence with me. And what gave me chills as well is that she had the same unmistakable mountain-like presence as Chris. And she'd had it all along. I just didn't know Chris to see that mirroring. And she, you know, just like Chris, there's this fierce but calmness to her. You know, she's like very much a womanly force, but they were just so similar. And that night in our audio messages, I told Chris about her and he simply replied with, "I'm looking forward to seeing what unfolds with Viva." And at the time, we were still really just talking as friends a bit. I think we had a feeling it was growing, but all I knew was that Chris would be in my life for a long time because I was so intrigued by him. I was so drawn in by his depth. And I was also struck by the way his presence mirrored hers that evening that I felt her, that same quiet strength, that same unwavering energy. And so it was a very unique experience to tell him about her. And a few weeks later, our conversation shifted, that friendship deepened into something more. And once again, I felt Viva's presence. And Chris and I talked about planning to have a child in the next few years. You know, a few months into being romantic, we talked about that. And we knew we were aligned on our futures and felt that we had met our match and who we had prayed for quite some time. Being 39 years old with two children, you're not really casually dating. You cut right to the chase. And being 39 years old, I thought maybe that Viva would come when I was 41 or maybe 42. And so that was kind of our plan. But Viva had different plans. She wanted to come in much, much sooner. And she had waited long enough. And I was finally with her father. So in October, we conceived. It wasn't intentionally, but we both felt that we'd be excited if it happened. So we left it up to God. And the very next day, I knew without a doubt that I was pregnant. My body just felt different, like it was already becoming a vessel. And I could sense her presence with me so differently. And I just knew it was her. And when the test confirmed that I was pregnant, I immediately booked a flight to go see Chris to tell him in person. He was just as excited as I was. And that night we went to dinner to celebrate. The next day we curled up on Laguna Beach, soaking in the reality of what was unfolding. And then we went to my best friend's house for dinner. And there I miscarried. I had already started to bleed, and then it was a full bleed there at my best friend's house. And in the short time that I knew that I was pregnant, I felt like the luckiest girl in the world to get to experience it the way I had hoped with Chris, the man I had hoped for. And as I cried in Chris's arms, he held me and whispered, "Now we know how badly we want this, and we're definitely trying for her now." I slept about 14 hours, and then, a few days later, we went to hike in Santa Monica. Even though I was still bleeding pretty heavily, I just wanted to be in the mountains. And when we got to the top, I wandered off to find a spot to pee. And as I did, I felt more blood flow out. And so as I free blood on the mountain and just gave it to the earth, I spoke to the spirit of the life that I knew was still meant to come. And I said, you can come whenever you're ready. Now you know how much we want you. Whenever you're ready, we're ready for you. And that was around November 4th. And that next month, I wasn't sure when my ovulation was happening. I wasn't sure how to restart tracking after a miscarriage, but I did have a ballpark on when it would be. And I know my body pretty well enough to know the signs of ovulation. So Chris and I intentionally tried during the time that I figured I was ovulating. And I remember the night that we tried. I laid next to him with my eyes closed and I saw a bright light. And a week or two later, I felt a really intense pain in my pelvic space, and it was so sharp and consuming that I couldn't move for over an hour. And I thought that it might be some lingering effect from the miscarriage. And when I mentioned the pain to Dr. Nathan Riley, our next podcast guest, actually, he urged me to go to the emergency room right away. After sitting there for hours in a very overcrowded hallway at St. David's in South Austin, I was given an ultrasound and they couldn't find anything, but my HCG levels suggested early pregnancy. I just wondered if maybe the miscarriage had caused my levels to be off, and so I left the hospital with more questions than answers. But as I suggested, a week later, I went back to Baylor for another ultrasound. I went to Baylor this time because St. David's was so overcrowded. However, the technician there was not very gentle. She was not very kind, and I felt very uncomfortable with her. Again, they couldn't find anything, but my HCG levels had risen even more. And so they told me to return in 3 days because they were concerned that I was having an ectopic pregnancy and that if my levels reached 6,000, I would bleed internally. And so I came back 3 days later, my third visit. The ultrasound tech seemed very disinterested, dismissing my concerns, and just kind of rolled her eyes at me and was like, I'm not going to see anything that I didn't see 3 days ago. Like, didn't even want to do the ultrasound. And the doctor, without even having the ultrasound, was ready to rule it as ectopic and suggested either giving me a chemo drug to remove the pregnancy or, worse, removing one of my tubes. But every cell in my body said no, and Chris felt the same way. So I walked out and I drove back to St. David's, knowing I'd be there for hours, crammed between other people because they are so overcrowded, but something told me, go back to St. David's. And I'm so glad that I did, because this time they did find something, a tiny nugget of a sac. And as I watched the ultrasound, it dawned on me that the pain I felt in my pelvic space was her implanting. Her presence is so undeniable. It's a force so strong that it held me in place for that entire hour that I felt it. It was like a seed sprouting, breaking through the soil, pushing and shifting everything around it to make room for life. Painful, but purposeful. My body was adjusting to hold her spirit. And when they told me that I was measuring at about 5 weeks pregnant, and it was only early December, I couldn't help but note the oddness and the time difference from the miscarriage to now, because I had just miscarried about 5 weeks ago. And it is a mystery to me why the miscarriage happened and why she came immediately after that loss, but perhaps something needed to be cleared first. Maybe the miscarriage wasn't a loss, but more of a preparation. Maybe it was meant to show us just how deeply we wanted her and how ready we were for her. And maybe she wanted to feel that wanting and that readiness. And a few weeks later, I was lying in the bed in Chris's room at his grandfather's ranch in Oregon. And I was feeling insecure about provision and about receiving. Even though I had prayed for a provider and a protector, and that is so what Chris is, I could feel, you know, you pray for something, but then you have to receive it, right? And I could feel that my heart and my soul were not being fully open to it all. And Chris and I discussed it about the ways I was still holding on to past fears and past stories and old walls built from survival. And I could feel my resistance, but I didn't know how to soften it. And I started to feel that same energy from Viva that I did many years ago of get it together. I'm coming in. But this time also with, I'm coming in for a very specific life, a sweet life. Stop blocking the sweetness that he wants to provide us. We've already lived that type of life. This time we're going to have a sweet life. And as I felt this message from her so clearly, the song Sweet Life by Essie Jane started to play in my head. And for a moment, I felt out of body. I felt something clearing and purifying and refining and aligning. And for about 30 minutes, I laid there just experiencing it. And during that time, I had this like out of body, like visuals of lives where she was caring for me as my mother and lives where I was caring for her as her mother, lives where we had intense trauma and her message so clear and unwavering. This life is different. This life is sweet. And she was choosing this time with this father to not be born in trauma, to come after I healed so much of my womb, to have a father whose love and safety heal our female lineage, to be born in a loving sanctuary of a home full of laughter, to two magical siblings overjoyed that she's coming. What I had always hoped for. She waited for this time, and she waited for us specifically. After this experience, I broke into a fever that lasted for a few days. And even though Chris and I were worried because you're not really supposed to have fevers while you're pregnant, I knew and I felt so sick. I was miserable, but I also knew that it was a part of this cleansing process. Many shamanic traditions that I've studied teach that fevers are upgrades. And as painful as this experience was, I knew it was purifying things. And her middle name, Kali, which Chris chose, now made so much sense. Kali is the goddess who destroys illusion. She strips away what no longer serves. She's the benevolent mother. She's fierce and tender all at once. She conquers fear. She brings order from chaos and reminds you that suffering is not a requirement for receiving. She reminds you to receive, receive, receive. She is misunderstood like all wild and powerful things, but she is exactly who my daughter is, who our daughter is. And I'm still navigating the desire to birth her naturally. I shared in part one about how my last two births were a bit traumatic and why. So I'm still navigating this desire to birth her naturally and vaginally and very differently. But my OBGYN, who I do trust, said that even though it's been 8 years since my second cesarean, she feels that it's too risky to do a vaginal birth due to risk of uterine rupture. And still, I really want a different experience, not just for her, but for me. And I'll share more about what my OBGYN says in my episode with Dr. Nathan. But my first two pregnancies, I never got that kind of birth. And the absence of it stayed with me for so long. And it took years to release that grief. And it also took years for me to recover. So I shared this with my intuitive coach, Stephanie Sievers. You may have heard me speak about her in the past. She's the one who's guided me through so much. And she listened. And then she said, I'm very concerned about the natural birth. There's a lot of danger and potential for a lot of bleeding. Do your due diligence. Think of everything you've been through. This child has still made her way back to you. How she comes into the world is far less important than that she's coming. She'll be just as healthy. Choose the path that is safest for your body. And then she paused before continuing and went on to say, I hear alarm bells. Complications of uncontrolled bleeding in particular is what I'm getting. At least be in a hospital setting. A home birth is not loving in this experience. And she said, don't think of this as loss or giving something up. You're having a baby however she comes. She's already so familiar with you. She doesn't need to come through the vaginal portal. If she doesn't do that, it's because she doesn't need to. She is a magician. Your doctor's concern and my vision is exactly the same, so pay attention to that. You do not need an initiation into motherhood. You've already done what's best for your kids and faced fears and given them what they needed, even still. And all of that is more powerful than the pain of birth contractions. You've had contractions of motherhood that are harder than childbirth. This is another opportunity for you to keep working on no longer feeling that you have to prove yourself to anyone. And I will say, Stephanie is so spot on so many times. When I went through that, the ending of that shorter relationship prior to Chris, I told her, I said, I am done having short relationships where I learn different things in each one. I am done going through breakups and having my heart hurt. I want my 50 plus year relationship where I learn it all with that one person, because we are committed and we learn so much more because we are committed. I don't want to learn just a little bit with each person. I want my person and I want to learn it all with him. And I said, it sounds absurd, but I want to be married and pregnant within a year. And I want to be on that journey. And that sounds impossible. And she said, no, I don't think it's impossible. This was, right about a year ago this month when I was having this conversation with her. And she said, no, I don't think it's impossible. She said, actually, I'm here. I see wedding bells and the date 8/8, which is Lionsgate, for the following year. So 8/8/2025 was the date that she was getting and in seeing wedding bells. And what's so crazy is not only am I with Chris and pregnant, but Viva's due date is 8/8 Lionsgate. So that's just like how, you know, it's a little, you know, it wasn't to be like exact, but she saw it, you know, and she even saw Viva's due date without knowing it was Viva. We thought maybe it was a marriage or something, a wedding date or something like that. But how crazy is it that that's Viva's due date? So Stephanie, I really trust her. And, you know, sometimes it is like the Matrix Oracle where they tell you something and it's, you know, the person in the Matrix told, him that he wasn't the one, so that he would do what needed to be done so that he is the one. Sometimes that's the case. But either way, hearing her message about this birth, her words settled into me and weaved their way through the part of me that still wanted to fight and the part that still wanted to prove something and to reclaim something, because sometimes we make decisions based on trying to take back what we feel we missed out on or to reclaim something. But maybe there's nothing to reclaim. Maybe she's right. Maybe this is the lesson that love is not about suffering, that proving myself is no longer required, that the magic is already here, that my daughter is already home. In my next episode with Dr. Nathan, we'll be diving into this, navigating the unknown, standing at the crossroads of the birth choices that I have, still unsure of which path to take, completely unsure still. If you're curious about the many ways a child can enter the world and about birth trauma, about recovery of that trauma, and about carrying a healthy pregnancy, also at age 40 too, 40 as well, then stay tuned. That'll be our next episode. But for right now, I want to share something that I'm working on for Viva. It's a very rough draft. It's a bit out of order, and I want to make it much more poetic and beautiful, but here's a rough draft version. Viva, I'm writing you a letter, one that will hold pieces of me, pieces of my life, the winding stories that led to you, things that I want you to know about me. I was born with the last name Buckmaster, and as a kid, I felt embarrassed by it. I thought it was too easy to be made fun of, but now at 40, I wish I had carried it with pride all along. I love the last name Buckmaster. I see it as unique and I see its strength. I want you to know that I spent much of my life feeling like I had to earn love, that I twisted myself into smaller versions of me that weren't real, hoping someone would choose me. And that for years, I didn't know love was something I was allowed to just have or something that I just am. And I know this now. I want you to know that I have walked away from things that almost broke me. That leaving was never easy, but staying would have cost me my soul. That I learned to choose myself, which led to me allowing others to choose me as well. And in doing so, I made room for the life that would one day hold you. I got married at 20 because I was told it was God's plan for me, but I left 2.5 years later because I realized my heart belonged out in the world, not just inside 4 church walls and in a marriage because I thought it's what God wanted. I wanted to be God's hands and feet, not just sit in a pew and learn about a God who would damn people to hell. I want you to know that I used to shrink my voice, that I stayed quiet when I should have screamed. I apologized when I had nothing to be sorry for, and I made myself smaller so others wouldn't feel uncomfortable. But I also want you to know that I am remembering not to do that anymore. I pour my heart into my podcasts and my writings. I'm working on a book, and I do this honestly and transparently, even when I don't feel articulate. Even when I worry I'll be misunderstood, even when I wonder if people will think I'm weird, I do it anyway because I believe that somehow it matters. And besides, weird is just something that we don't understand yet. I want you to know that when I was younger, I forgot to love my body. I treated it like a workplace instead of my home. I punished it. I starved it. I pushed it past its limits because I thought worthiness lives somewhere on the other side of suffering. But I learned, and if there is one thing I could give you, it's the unwavering knowing that your body is a temple worthy of love, nourishment, and devotion, just as it is. Your body and all that it feels is holy. I want you to know that I lived through pain that nearly swallowed me whole. That I stayed too long in places I should have left, and that I learned love isn't something to chase or beg for or prove. And because of that lesson, I was able to find your dad. I have dated men who loved me for what I gave or for how I looked, but your dad loves me for me. I want you to know that your dad loved me from the moment he met me, not for who he thought I could be, but for exactly who I am. That he loves limitlessly with his whole being. He loves me for my heart and for my soul, and he was certain about me from the start. He gave me the exact love that I had prayed for, and I am still in awe of that. His love strengthened my faith, but I'll get to more of that in just a moment. I once petitioned on behalf of child slaves in Uganda, camping on the lawns of the state capitol until they paid attention to this cause that I cared so deeply about, and even going to the White House. I organized benefits to build schools and water wells, and at age 23, I got on a plane by myself to meet those children, to look into their eyes, to do the hokey pokey with them, to hold their hands, to see what our efforts had built. And I fell in love with so many of them. It's why Africa is tattooed on my right foot, because some places and some people leave permanent marks on your soul in a beautiful way. I hitchhiked solo at 2 a.m. in Bali in order to make it to the top of the tallest mountain by sunrise. I arrived in Uganda just before midnight on New Year's Eve and got lost, so I stayed with a local that I had just met. We didn't speak the same language, and without knowing anything about me, they kept me safe. I get nervous at the thought of you doing things like this because I got myself into some real pickles. On my third day in a Ugandan village, I got malaria. And the tea that saved me cost $5. Most children who die of malaria there do so because they can't afford that tea. And that was a perspective shifting reality check that I never want to forget. I want you to know that I traveled across the world to find pieces of myself, sitting in ashrams in Brazil, walking the streets of India, standing on mountaintops in Greece, that I have danced naked under the moon, howling. I have cried in temples and I have prayed with my whole body. That I once drank from a well I thought would heal me, only to end up in a hospital because sometimes the medicine is in the lesson that we don't have to rip ourselves open and that healing can actually be gentle. I backpacked over 30 countries by myself, and although it was the most freeing experience, I was always looking forward to one day having the best travel partner to do even more countries with. And I found that in your dad. I'm so excited for you to join us. We're going to take you around the world. I want you to know that I have made so many mistakes, that I have been both the hero and the villain in my own story, and that I have fallen apart and put myself back together again, each time softer, wiser, and more whole. I want you to know that at 40, I am still learning, that there are no straight lines, no perfect answers, that we are all just doing our best to love and be loved. So Viva, let your love pour out like a river in full flow, wild, untamed, and without apology. Love the world with a ferocity that feels like sunrise and storm all at once. Let your heart open wide enough to hold the vastness of your dreams and never shrink back in fear. Life is too short, too precious to live small. Love without hesitation and laugh without restraint as loud as you can with abandon and embrace every moment as the gift that it is. Because my love, the world needs the fullness of you. Your light, your joy, your tenderness, and your fierceness and your bigness, just as it is. So live big and love big. You have nothing to prove, only to be. You already are, and that is more than enough. You are a gift we get to receive. I hope that my life shows you that you don't have to follow a path that makes sense to anyone but yourself, that you can live with both courage and curiosity, take risks, and trust your heart wherever it leads you, because this world is big and it is beautiful and it is yours to make your own. And now I want to tell you some things about your dad. When Chris loves you, you never have to doubt it for a second. And I know that you will never have to. He is so good at loving. He's already writing to you in the early mornings, pouring his love into words, because he loves through all five love languages: touch, time, words, gifts, and service. He doesn't just say that he loves, he lives it. He makes love a verb in every action, in every small and quiet moment that no one else sees. And I could not have chosen a better father for you. Your dad is a good man, one of the best this world holds. And not just good, he's extraordinary. He's the kind of man who holds integrity in his bones, who meets life with open hands and a wide heart, who carries strength, but not as a weapon, only ever as shelter, as warmth, as something safe for you to lean into. He is solid ground, but he is also wind. Always moving, always seeking, always growing. And all that he's done for me, I know he will do for you. He is going to give you the sweetest life. He will give you a life of tenderness and adventure, of deep belly laughter and wild curiosity, with safety and freedom in equal measure, where the world feels soft enough to fall into without fear. He will teach you how to climb trees and how to rest under them. He will remind you that you can be both soft and fierce. Your dad does not live in a box. He moves through life with boundless curiosity, with a heart that refuses to shrink, with love that knows no walls. He lives limitlessly and he loves limitlessly. He's already given your brother and sister the childhood I always wished that I could give them. They are parasailing over the ocean as I record this. But they didn't meet him until they were 8 and 9. Still, the biggest blessing, but you will know him from the very first moment. You will begin your life with the warmth of his love already around you, and that makes my heart swell with joy. You'll know his love as your first, and in his eyes, you'll always see the unwavering belief that you are enough just as you are, and that love will never, ever falter. I'm so excited to look at you and see a blend of us. We're not perfect, we're far from it, but you will never ever doubt our love. I want you to be able to look back at your childhood and describe it as full of play and laughter and adventure, one that you didn't have to recover from. I feel so confident that with Chris as your daddy, this will be the case. I can already feel your connection to him through the way your tiny spirit responds to his touch. I can feel your joy when he kisses my belly. I can feel your love for him, your soul deep knowing and excitement that he is your dad. I can feel your familiarity when I sing or play Icaros. I can feel your excitement over our excitement for you. I can feel your love and your consistent reminder that you're here for a sweet life. I have felt you here long before you arrived in form. And now, knowing that you are here in my womb, that my future grandchildren are already held within you as tiny seeds, it is a responsibility I hold with reverence, and it is an honor. Thank you, Viva, for choosing us again. Mom. And I'd like to close the episode with this. Everything unfolds in the way that it needs to for our deepest growth. My first two children came through in the midst of chaos as part of a journey of breaking free, of healing, of shifting generations of pain into something new. They were the catalyst for my own awakening, guiding me towards the courage to leave what was never meant to be endured. And Viva is coming into something already built, a home already filled with softness. She does not have to be the reason for transformation. She simply gets to arrive and be held in it. All of these experiences were exactly what I needed. And that's what the universe does. It gives us exactly what we need for our deepest growth. And each of these children signed up for something different for their own lives as well. And at 40, pregnancy feels sacred in a way I couldn't have understood at 29. I am not surviving anymore. I am not afraid to rest. I am not afraid to receive. I am not just trying to keep my head above water or prove something or heal through force. This pregnancy feels like a culmination, like a love letter from the universe reminding me that all the work, all the tears, all the leaps of faith were leading here to a life where I can bring a child into peace, into love, into a family that already feels whole. And still, there's something about this journey that reminds me, it takes me back to that 25-year-old in Brazil, that experience I shared about in episode part one of this episode. It reminds me of that 25-year-old in Brazil sitting in the silence of that ashram, staring out at the vastness of the mountain and Amazon rainforest, wondering if she would ever feel like she was enough, if she would ever be happy, if she would ever fully live, not realizing that she already was enough, that she was already fully living. And I think of that girl often, and I want to sit beside her on that mountain and take her hand and whisper to her, you're going to make it. You're going to have a daughter named Viva, along with two other incredible beings, Sol and Jaya. And you're going to live fully, deeply, beautifully. And love is going to meet you right where you are with a man that feels as incredible as this mountain. Thank you, God, for showing us how good it can get. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this solo cast and for being on this wild journey with me. It would mean so much if you'd leave a review or share an episode with a friend. If someone crossed your mind as you listen to this story, then it's likely that they would benefit from it. So share it along. You can also join me on Instagram at Untamed and Unashamed Podcast. As always, be a light, stay open, and remember, you belong here.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.